This is a Pinball News production.
Pinball, which was a release on the American Movie Classics Network. So we wanted to do a production, but when we did it, we both wanted to do about something that we loved, and we really loved pinball. But all we did was we just loved playing pinball. We didn't know much about the history. So we knew that our goal was for a national television, American television release, and we did that. But before that, we knew that we had to find out as much information as we could. So I made a phone call to Gary Stern, who probably doesn't remember when I called him, but I did call him, and he told me, you know, to do this right, you have to go to the mountain. And I said, where's the mountain? Because I didn't know anything. We were in Boston. He says, the mountain is like Chicago, you idiot. So so we went to Chicago, and then that's where we got to see the factories, and we met Roger Sharp, Dick Buchel, all these people that helped us make it possible. So that's how it really got started. Going back before that, me and Howard started talking about, how do we do this? What are we going to do? You know. So I grew up in the 70s playing the wood steel rail games. The Gottlieb Sure Shot was my favorite game. And so I was thinking from then on. And then Howard says, no. He grew up in a place like Coney Island, which is called Revere Beach. And his experience was with the penny arcades in the 1950s. So my experience and Howard's had nothing really in common. So that's kind of... We bridged that, and then we started talking to Dick Buchel, who said, you got to go back to the 1600s if you really want to tell the story, which was a game called Nine Holes that the British Royals would play in the 1600s. And so it went from Nine Holes into Bagatelle and all those other things along the way. So as we started shooting, we had to go to Hollywood, we had to go to Chicago, we went to arcades in Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, to get all the necessary information that we needed to shoot. And then we got help from Joe Kamenkow, Michael Gottlieb, of course Slash from Guns N' Roses, Joe Perry from Aerosmith, Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt, baseball player. And it really wouldn't have happened without all these people, you see, helping us along the way, guiding us. We needed the celebrities. We needed the input from Dick Buchel. We needed the historians, Roger Sharp and the Gottliebs and the Sterns, everybody to tell us what to do and, you know, what to shoot. So that's what we did, and that's kind of how we put the whole thing together. Let's see. So it was really me and Howard's labor of love, and we came from two different backgrounds, and that's kind of how the whole thing got put together. As we started shooting it, because I wanted to get something on television, I found out there was a company in Australia called, and they're a good company. They're called Beyond Productions, and they were doing the same thing I was doing, which, you know, scared the shit out of me. So I told them, I said, look, we're pretty much wrapping this thing up, so you guys should just back off, and we're going to do this one.
We were just starting it.
And they stopped. I couldn't believe it. They didn't do it. So, and they went on to do a lot of great television shows and things, but they, just by me saying that, they somehow backed off. So then we got back into it again, and the challenge was, me and Howard own a media company back in Boston, so we do thousands of television commercials. We do websites. We do marketing. We do video for the web. We do product video. We do lots of different things. So in between commercials or whatever we were doing, we would work on pinball. And when pinball started, we started doing a motorcycle rally series that was a huge international hit on pay-per-view. So that slowed it down. So all these things kept jumping in the way, and then we finally put our nose to the grindstone and we finished it. The good news is it was seen by millions of people around the world due to the American Movie Classics release. The only unfortunate thing about the history of pinball was the only thing going out there was a really average VHS tape, and that was it until now. So what we did is we made a print right off the master, direct copy, to DVD, so now you can see a really good copy of it. And compared to the VHS, there is no comparison. And there's a special feature section with has outtakes of some shots we did. You can hear us directing things to make some shots. And there's commentary from me and Howard talking about how we did things, how we made the shots. Howard made this really cool thing where he would push the camera with a, what was that thing, a harness or something?
We actually use a lipstick camera for some of the inside of the machine shots,
And we wanted to try to get something even a little bit more unique than that. So what we did was I designed this little metal frame that attached to the camera. And what we did was we put the ball in the frame so that you could actually move the camera and the ball would roll in front of the lens. And it made you feel like you were sitting on top of the ball. It was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. And it worked out pretty good. We had a lot of fun with it.
So that's like at the beginning of the movie, we, you know, I think that's what got American movie classics to bite was Howard's little thing, because remember she said like the ball, you were like the ball, or the ball was as big as a house, or whatever she said. I think it was what kind of got them, and then they watched it and they liked the celebrities and things like that. So, but yeah, that was a real fun part of shooting. It was that little device to push the ball around. And we've been using a different, what is the name of that camera we've been using the last couple of days?
GoPro.
We've been getting this GoPro in the machine. I mean, the ball's been whacking the lens, coming at you this big, like, you know.
We're glad it's a rental.
Yeah. And we've been, if we look like zombies, we've been shooting nonstop since when?
Since the Wednesday.
Wednesday, not sleeping much. Shooting. We've gotten tons of great footage. We've interviewed lots of great people, and we're going to go to the Chicago show. And in Chicago, we're going to probably try to shoot the rest of the games that we want to shoot and do the rest of the talking heads, the rest of the interviews, to finish it out for the History of Pinball Part 2. So I guess in the future, this will be called Part 1, and then the one we're doing now will be called Part 2. So what we were disappointed was we were seeing a lot of bootlegs, a lot of it. So then you had the VHS tape, which was old technology. So people would take the VHS tape and bump it to a DVD, which just made it even worse. So we saw some really awful images of it, and we were thinking, man, you know, let's look at the mat. And then we looked at the master tape, and the master tape looked great. So then we made all these DVDs, and if it wasn't for Ron Chan, we probably wouldn't have done this, because he got the ball rolling, because he says, hey, you know, we looked at your film, and you had trouble finding me online, and it was this long story, you know. And then we said, hey, you know, maybe we should do this and then do another one, because we stopped around 92, 93, and do part two from 92 or 93 on till today, present day pinball. So that's what we're working on right now. And everybody's been so cooperative. We've talked to everybody here at the expo has been really, really great, letting us get around. I think in some ways we've been a pain in the ass because we're dragging all this gear around and there's people trying to have fun. But, you know, we're trying to make this as good as we can, and we want to make it good or better than this one. So if we've gotten anybody's way, we apologize for that. So we're excited that now that we have the DVD, the quality is very good, and then there's some new outtakes and commentaries by me and Howard that nobody's ever heard before. That's about all I can think of. Anything else?
There's a lot of new features. There's other footage that we've never shown anyone before. You have to understand that when we originally did the video, it was formatted for a one-hour television program, and then when you throw in television commercials, it comes out to 40-something minutes. So it's difficult to tell the entire history in such a short amount of time. So as a result, a lot of the things that we shot never got put in the first video. So we took some of that footage and we put it in this version of it. You know, it has a menu so that you can go and you can see some of that. Mark, why don't we tell them a few stories about some of the shooting experiences?
Oh, okay. So what you'll see, what you won't see on this, but you'll see in the extra sections if you get the new DVD, we kind of got like Guns N' Roses breaking up on the telephone, the band breaking up, because this was like at a really, I didn't realize it till we left, but this was at a really bad time for the band. Slash and Axl were just, you know, they weren't getting along. I don't think Axl Rose has gotten along with any other human being ever. But him and Slash are somehow trying to hold it together. So right in the middle of the interview, Axl calls, and it's in the extra section, and he starts saying, you know, I don't think it's, you shouldn't be playing with this person. I don't think this is a good idea, just dictating to this poor guy what you should and what you shouldn't do. And I could just see it. And then we had to, and Slash said, shut the cameras off, and we had to stop shooting. And he had to gain his composure again. Shooting Slash was fun. His house had like these dinosaurs coming out of the walls. He had snakes. He had a cougar. His house was wild in Hollywood. Tons of pinball machines. The day we got there, all these like toy dinosaurs came in the mail. Elton John had just sent him this calendar with these beautiful photographs of him in it. So he was just really, Slash was loved by everybody, and he still is to this day. So we were really lucky that we got him, and we got him at a kind of the prime of his career, I think. You know, it was an interesting part of his career.
I don't know if anyone's read his book, but it, like when we think back at it, it was amazing that we caught him in a fairly sane time, because we came to the door. He was in a house in Hollywood. His house had burned down, and he had rented this other home. And he came to the door. His wife came to the door.
His girlfriend.
And she said, let me get him. And she shut the door. And we're standing out there with a crew, and we're afraid that, like, they're not going to come back and open the door. So about 5 minutes go by, and he comes by. He opens the door, and he's barefooted, and he's in skin-tight black pants, no shirt on. And he has a glass of vodka in his hand. This is like 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I'm going, oh, this is going to be
I think there was something in the vodka. I think it was cranberry juice or orange juice. But
he was really living the rock and roll lifestyle at that point, and it really showed as we progressed through the day. You know, it was a lot of fun working with him. He was a great guy. Really got some good interviews, and some of the outtakes that we have on this video are really fun to watch, and things that like no one had ever seen before, especially the telephone call.
So, and then we had with Joe Perry. He was great. Joe Perry was interesting. When you do filming or cinematography, and we've done a lot of TV shows and commercials, it's rare that a guy goes, okay, sit down, get the cameras rolling, let's do it. And Joe Perry just nailed it. So I guess he knew in his brain exactly what I was going to ask him, how it related to pinball, and they knew how to end it. So he just did it perfectly. I was really impressed with Joe Perry. And I never saw Joe Perry laugh in my life, but we had a Fishtails machine in our studio at the time. We have recording studios. We've recorded bands like Fish, Tracy Chapman, a lot of big groups. We have a television studios, green screen shooting studios. So it's kind of a big media company that we own. And I never saw Joe Perry laugh in my life. And he started playing Fishtails. And when you play Fishtails, the guy goes, he put the quarter and goes, gone fishing, leave a message. And he just started laughing. That was so funny to him, you know? And I said, wow, I never seen him laugh. And then he didn't really laugh or smile again after that. He just did his thing, you know. Frank Thomas was kind of weird. That was, you know, the Big Hurt baseball player. And when we came to his office, I don't think he was in the mood to be interviewed. He was, like, reading the paper and holding it stiffly. And we were going, oh, man, this is going to suck, you know. So Howie started talking about golf and all these things that he liked. You know, Howie's good with that, with getting to people. When we first go in to shoot him, he kind of, like, quickly finds some common ground, quicker than I do, and he'll start talking about it. And that really made Frank Thomas open up and get really enthusiastic. He's like over enthusiastic after that.
I remember trying to talk to him, and I asked him something, and he kind of looked up at me and he gave me a one word answer, and he looked back down and I said, strike one. And then about, you know, 3 minutes later, we're setting up the lights, and I said something else to him, and he gave me the same kind of response, strike two. I'm thinking to myself, I go, this isn't going to be a good day. And then I looked up and I saw a picture of him playing golf with a couple of celebrities. And Mark and I had just done a commercial about a month earlier with Jose Canseco and Roger Clemens when they were both playing for the Red Sox. So I said, you know, Roger and Jose Canseco are, you know, we just did a commercial with them and they played golf that day, and I told him the story and his eyes lit up. And that was it. As soon as he started talking about golf, he was happy. And
we started shooting. let's see, what else?
Is he still an active ball player?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, he was still playing.
Yeah.
He was doing deals on the phone, too. He was negotiating deals. He had a guy that was like his sales rep, and he was doing a sunglasses deal, and they were talking about that when we were there, you know, going back and forth. Well, tell him I'll do it for this. And the guy says, no. And he was doing deals and stuff when we were there.
He was up in the Sears Tower on like the 32nd floor.
Yeah, he had a,
had
nice
a staff of like 8 or 10 people, and it was big time.
And his
pinball machine was in there.
When you walk in, the first thing you see is his pinball machine. So he was very proud of that machine.
I didn't see that machine on the floor, by the way, the Big Hurt. Has anybody ever played that?
I own a Big Hurt.
You do?
Yeah,
I studied his whole history and everything. By the way, I'm the guy that found you guys.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
What format did you shoot this on?
We shot it originally
on Beta.
SP.
Really?
Yeah. Now we're shooting. There wasn't HD back then.
No, I thought you might have used 35.
No. The first thing is on film. The first thing is on Super 16. The first sequence of the thing is on actual film.
That very first scene.
When you're walking in the dark. We shot that on film. I mean, we bankrolled this whole thing. You know, we had to pay for all our travels to Hollywood, to Chicago, and then back to Chicago again. Did it pay off? Yes, it paid off very well financially. But like anything, even when we did, I think when we did our pay-per-view project, didn't we bankroll all those?
Yeah, we did.
So there's this thing, you know, you hear about, like with this, a lot of people go to Hollywood or they'll go to television and they'll have an idea or they'll have a sheet of paper, and me and Howie say, let's show you what we can do. Now we've got this, I wish I could show you what we've been shooting the last couple of days, because the footage is just, the camera's amazing, and it's just really high quality footage, and it's good enough for broadcast television anywhere. So what me and Howie do when we do a pitch, we'll show them something, and then they don't have anything else to say, you see? Here's the intro, this is what it's going to look like, this we've even shot some of it, and that's what we were doing with Pinball, and that's what we did with all our other television specials we did, or pay-per-views, or whatever we did.
The technology has changed enormously in the last 15 years. I mean, we were actually, at that time, we were cutting most of our things on tape, you know, tape to tape, and you'd go through another generation every time you made an edit. Just as we started working on this project, this company called Media 100, Data Translation, came out, and they started doing digital editing. So we bought one of these units, and this was, I think it was the first project.
The first project we did on a nonlinear. It's the first one we got. It was the best one we could find, so we did it on this one. So we didn't want to lose generation, you know, getting these people or these rock stars or these machines.
But the cameras today are incredible. I mean, they look like film.
And we've been changing lenses with film lenses all, you know, in the last 3 days. That's all we've been doing, is getting these great shots and stuff like that.
AF-100.
Yeah.
It's a great camera. Yeah.
And you change lenses and you get whatever you want. And so far, I like what we've got. We talked to George. George Gomez was just like, Gary Stern was good. George Gomez was like an encyclopedia of information. This guy just knew everything about all these games that we liked. Tony today, what is Tony's last name? Page, Tony Page. We went to his house. We got Big Bang Bar. We shot that. Took the glass off. We got inside that. I love that. It's like my favorite game. I don't think I'll ever get to own one, which really stinks. But I love that game. So we shot that. We shot a lot of the critical games from that period on. When Howard was saying, it was pretty relevant about the television format. So we knew all these things about the history of pinball, but we could only put this much because television, this is what they wanted, and that's what we had to deliver. So we knew we would have to leave out so many things. So we just tried to do it the best we could to talk about pinball to the common man, you know, just to the regular Joe, not to the pinheads or the people like me and Howard that are super into, but just to regular people would like it too. And that was, and the response and the feedback from AMC was people liked it all over the place. The demographic was pretty spread out, you know, kids, grown-ups, everybody liked it. And AMC liked it too. So,
and Sierra Software liked it.
Oh yeah, Sierra Software liked it. And if anybody knows what we did, which actually was the best thing besides television, was we did a licensing deal with Sierra Software, who had a really neat virtual pinball game. So we had to turn over our master and edit a special re-edited master that they would include in their virtual pinball game. So if anybody knows of anybody who has connections in that kind of market, we'd love to talk to them, because we would make another master of part two, or maybe do part one and part two, and it would be free within that, if it's a, you know, with the virtual pinball game. I think that's how they did it, right? They said, right, it was free.
And they end up going through 40 or 50,000 units.
50,000 units, yeah. Really quick. But again, the challenge with me and Howard was we loved doing it, but we had a business to run too, so we were dealing with our clients every day, or sometimes nights or weekends, or I'd be writing or talking on the phone to somebody in Chicago, or Howard would be looking at footage, or we'd be going to Connecticut to this, what was that thing?
It was an expo.
It was a pinball expo. It's not like this one. It was like a small one in Connecticut and another one in somewhere else. We went to a bunch of small expos to get the footage we wanted and drove all over the place. And
a lot of arcades in the Massachusetts and New Hampshire area as well.
Yeah. And we'd see these things in arcades that were like really, really cool. Like, it's going to sound stupid, but there was this thing, and I don't know if you've seen it, you put in like a dime and these monkeys make all these noises. We were like intrigued by that game, and we just wasted half the day looking at the monkeys. And we said, you know, this is really cool. And then we said, we can't use this for anything. But by then, we'd wasted the day staring at the monkeys because it was the coolest.
We shot it
because we were going to try to use it in a car commercial. Like, and we were going to say, you know, I went to get a good deal, but I got the same old monkey show. And we were going to say, you know, we were going to use that. And We always, in our television commercials, me and Howie's always like to push the envelope and try to do, but I don't think car dealers were ready for that, the ones we were dealing with at the time. So, I would just say, we really enjoyed making it. It was a lot of fun. We met a lot of great people, obviously. I'll say one thing. I don't know if, how many of you remember Dick Buchel, but if it wasn't for Dick Buchel, no show. Impossible. He was like the guiding light the whole way, And if I'd write something and I'd start swearing, he'd go, no, you got to talk about this. Don't forget this. And he would, I had tons. I mean, I probably had 25 hours of phone calls time with Dick Buchel. He's the ultimate pinball historian. So,
and I have to say the pinball community really welcomed us. And, they opened up their homes. They let us go collectors, let us go to their houses.
Family pictures.
And shoot these incredible collections. And they treated us like we were family. It was really a wonderful experience. And I'm finding that same thing on the last few days that we've been shooting. We've been getting the same response. I mean, they're really unique people, really wonderful people. I think Ron said it, it's from the heart,
Yeah,
they're really into
pinball
it.
People are the best kind of people there are. So,
We could talk about the history, but you're going to, I would imagine most of you are going to stay and see the video. So, it would be better to see the actual video than just talk about the history. So if anybody has any questions about if they've seen it before or if they have any questions specifically that we could answer.
Or if you want to know the outtakes or special features and things. Or
the part that surprised me, and I know about it very early on, but I know several hundred pinball people, they weren't making it because they'd never seen it. You'd never seen it.
There were some. Actually, we caught a couple of bootleggers. We caught this one big bootlegger, and we had to stop him legally. It's a shame because me and Howard were doing so many. We're running another company, a media company. We did probably 8 other original programs besides the history of pinball that we were working on. If we had more time, we probably would have marketed it more right after it got it. AMC held onto the rights for a year, so we couldn't do anything for a year after it ran. And that's when everybody was interested, and so we were sitting on our hands. Then Sierra grabbed it, the software company, because they loved it, and they wanted to put it in their virtual pinball games.
But that was a limited license.
So I wish we probably had gone to DVD a lot sooner than now, but it was almost impossible in the business that we were in at the time.
Yeah, I think we're the ones that are guilty. You know how the shoemaker's kids don't have shoes? Well, that's essentially what happened. We got busy with our own business and we started making money. We sold the building we were in. We moved into a big office building. We changed
right outside
the name
of Boston.
Changed the name of the company and started doing really big marketing projects for a lot of Massachusetts companies. And this was just like an aside that we did years ago, and we just didn't keep marketing it. That's what happened.
But what we enjoyed the most is original productions. And I think, Ron, you saw the Lost 45s, which is going out to all these television networks now. So we like doing that the most. The problem is when you do something like that, you got to pay for it. You got to fly all over the place on your own dime. You got to put your clients on hold for a minute. Like, we were just thinking about all the things that we were supposed to do back in Boston, but when we were shooting here, it's never it balances out. So
we have 11 people that work for us, and right now we're out here, so it's difficult sometimes.
Yeah, but we like. I mean, I think our passion is original programming, and there's one that me and Howard are going to be starting very soon that I think that the whole world will know about. I can't say anything about it. That's going to be a really good series. It's going to really be liked by everybody. So we like doing that the best. I like pinball. I look forward to doing the history of pinball, part 2.
We're definitely re-energized by coming here.
We were just going to come here at first and hang out and talk about the movie. And then me and Howard said, why don't we just shoot? We're standing here. We're going to be surrounded by all these games. And so we said, we should just shoot. And so I'm glad we did because I looked at the footage. I mean, even after, with the technology, like you said, it's just so much better. We're shooting on the best camera we possibly can for what we want to do and to get into the nooks and crannies of the game and using that GoPro. So now the footage will be, as anything else, as technology grows, you get better looking footage. So we're excited about that as well. But again, it all goes back to the people, Roger Sharp, Dick Buchel, and the Stern people and Williams Pinball and Roger Sharp and all those people letting us into their houses, letting us. This, what was that guy?
Talk about Stan.
Oh, yeah. God, this guy. Stan. Moransky. Stan Moransky.
Yeah.
He was a really important part of the show, and nobody knows about this guy, or maybe you do. He lived outside
of Chicago,
yeah. Pretty far outside of Chicago.
Yeah.
Wealthy guy. I think he had his own airport in his backyard. But when you went into his base, I was missing all these bagatelles.
Well, first of all, he had pinball machines and coin-operated devices in every room in the house. The only rooms that were off limits were the bathroom and the bedroom. His wife drew the line there. But they were in
everywhere.
Room in his house.
It was nuts.
And he had this room downstairs that we went downstairs, and it was really dark, and it was this large room. And he said to Mark, he goes, walk through that turnstile. So Mark walks through the turnstile, and the lights came on.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. And then it lights up. It's like, wow. And all the games turn on. It was nuts.
It was crazy. It was like in 10 seconds, every game was on, and it was like music. It was like heaven for the pinball generation.
And he had all these games I absolutely needed from like 1901, 1912, 1920s, 1930s, all these rare bagatelle, all those that made the video. That I had all these gaps. And just by chance, going to Stan's house, filled up all with all the bagatelles, all those weird, cool, nifty little games. He had all of those games. So we really overstayed our welcome. I said, we're not leaving this place until we shoot every one of these games that we need. And I think Stan was cool with it. I don't know. I think his wife was like sick of us after a while. I go, how about that one? How about that one? How about that one? And then we just, we did that. It was the same thing at Slash's house. Slash enjoyed having us, but like I said, man, I can't leave until I get what I need from this guy, because I'm never going to see this guy again. And that's what it's like when you film a celebrity. Even with Joe Perry, I knew he had to go, and this guy was like telling us, he needs black coffee and water and do this, and he's got to be out of here. But I'm thinking, I don't care. I'm going to get what I need from this guy, and you're going to have to wait. And so me and Howard were politely, elegantly, maybe overstaying our welcome, but we left with the footage that we knew that we needed. And And I think that's going to be our approach to this one as well on part two. And
remember being with Steve Kordak?
Oh, yes. Steve Kordak was great, especially when he talks about the flippers. He was just so entertaining. He told us about tilt, and he was great. Steve Kordak was incredible.
How old was Steve then? Do you remember?
He was old then.
He was in his late 70s or maybe 80s?
It was 1994. 95?
He passed away last year.
Yeah.
He was 100.
At 100?
Okay, so he was great, yeah. Trying to think of any other people that... Roger Sharp was a great...
Yeah, Roger was awesome.
He kind of
yeah.
stitched the show together, too. And Joe Kamenkow was great. Joe Kamenkow told us some wild stories about Slash that never made the tape. But he was interesting. Everybody was really enthusiastic. Everybody helped us out a lot.
The Hollywood people were really nice, too.
Yeah, we went to the Baywatch set. The people from Sony Pictures let us in there. We got to see Robert De Niro's signature signing off on the Frankenstein machine. We talked how you make a pinball machine with movie licensing. We talked to Gary Stern about that today. And we had a great interview with Gary Stern yesterday about things like that, and with George Gomez as well.
And were you here when Gary gave his talk?
No, we were shooting. We were either sleeping or shooting since we've been here. Mostly shooting.
It was the best talk he's ever done.
Really?
Well, he talked about his history and his father and the people that he knew. And
yeah.
Everything different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we got some of that from him today on the interview.
Yesterday.
I mean, yesterday. I'm sorry.
Yesterday. Yeah. We've been working too hard. So
we got this gentleman Jerry. Has a question.
So you talked about working on part two. Did you just start on it?
Yes.
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 Yeah.
You got it all mapped out, or are you just going to get a bunch of footage?
Basically, it's going to be probably from like 92 till today.
But you talked about how you had to cut this down. I mean, is part two a 43-minute?
I think what we'll end up doing this time, because now everything's on DVD, so we'll have the luxury of being able to do an hour program, but then we'll be able to have all kinds of extras for instance, we're also working on a music video. We're really good with music, and so we're going to do a music video called Back Glass Women. And
which is like a good, really good rock and roll song. It sounds like a Stone song. And we shot all these Back Glass Women when we were here. And we'll shoot some hot chicks playing pinball, and that's how you'll kind
of see. So that'll be an extra. So the people that want just the history will be able to go on it, watch the history. And the people that want the full experience will be able to go and go into the menu and see some fun stuff.
Like Big Bang Bar. I love that game. But unfortunately, we're going to have to edit that to 2 minutes. So in the extras, there'll be a lot more stuff from Big Bang Bar that probably won't make the final. So there'll be a lot of extras and things like that.
Gene Cunningham?
Yes.
We talked to Gene. Yeah, we interviewed Gene Cunningham about Big Bang Bar. He told us some interesting stories. Gene was great. He was a great interview. And I guess that's probably my favorite game. You know, it's just, I wish I could get that game, but it doesn't look like that's...
Oh, if you got enough money.
Yeah, a lot of money for that game.
Well, we...
Yeah, they keep doing this. Yeah.
We shot one today, and I said, so would you sell that? And he said, absolutely not. I said,
he wouldn't even, like, entertain a price.
I said, what if I gave you 20 grand? He says, nope.
It was just so like, forget it. And his was perfect. Tony Page's. No, I don't know.
It was the original.
Original one. But it was in pristine. Oh, the one we shot today was in pristine, like off-the-showroom condition. And all his games were like that. This is Tony Page. He was like right nearby. He was like 15 minutes away from here.
I think he told me it had like 200 plays on it or something.
Tony Page. He's been working on the games here, fixing them during the expo. So we got some great footage today of Big Bang Bar, Star Trek First Generation. What else we shoot today, Howie? It's a blur, but I know. We've been shooting nonstop without a break. I mean, not even going to the bathroom. We just try to shoot historic games that go from 92 on. Yeah. And the ones that we missed, George Gomez told us today, shoot this one, shoot this one, shoot this one. So we were just writing all these things down frantically. So we've got a pretty good running list. You know, when we did the first one, we knew that we'd miss a lot of great games because that's just the nature of it. If you got TV, you're limited to an hour. If it really makes TV, if part two makes TV, it'll probably have to be 45 minutes, 43 minutes probably.
Did Gary invite you to the factory?
Yes. We're going to go shoot there. And Gary's going to give me some personal pictures, maybe a Life in Pinball thing about Gary perhaps. And we're going to get a lot of stuff from Stern.
Getting back to your original question, so, you know, what we'll end up doing is we'll take what we got today, we'll go back to Boston, and we'll start putting things together and logging it and writing the script, and then we'll find out what we're missing, and then we'll fill it in when we go to Chicago, and then whatever else we have to do.
We'd
probably try to get some, maybe some rock stars or
celebrities
to just spice it up a little bit, because people enjoy that, I think.
And I think... probably Stern. I think he can connect me through his people to get a celebrity or a rock star or whoever's popular with whatever game to talk about it.
Did you meet Randy Peck?
Yes. Randy Peck?
He
has an arcade, I guess you could call it that, in Long Beach. His private 300 pinball machines and all kinds
of things. No.
Haven't met him yet.
We were there. We were in Hollywood, but... And Tim Arnold, we should go to Vegas too. Tim's here, isn't he?
Yeah.
So we got to talk to Tim somehow and meet him too.
Yeah.
Anybody from the Pacific Pinball Museum?
Yeah, Michael. Yeah, we.
Basement's filled with these things, but they keep it very quiet.
It's kind of like an underground secret.
I was just in Cincinnati. There's guys with 300 and 400 machines, and they're.
It's amazing.
It's a whole underground there.
What is the? I think I asked you this. Who has the world's biggest collection? Or who's up there?
Tim Arnold has something like 1,200 machines.
Up and running.
But there's a guy in Australia that I believe has 2,000.
Oh, that's too far.
His name's Alan Tate. He's building a museum.
2,000.
Yeah. Did you hear Michael Shaloub, who's written? There's two guys in Australia that have Greek heritage. Rossignoli and Shaloub, and they've written beautiful coffee table books.
Really? Okay.
You haven't seen those?
No.
Okay.
There were some of the Shaloub books in the raffle.
Okay.
We'll check it out.
Okay.
They're beautiful books, well-researched.
Wow.
He interviewed all these guys, the guys that are dead and gone now.
Wow.
If you go out to the show floor, there's some for sale up.
Okay, we'll have to look. We've been looking, chasing down machines and people, but...
Well, there's a pretty good amount of literature, fortunately.
Okay.
Before, there was like...
Yeah.
I just came in, but...
Okay.
How many documentaries are there right
now? Ours is the only one that's made it an American national television release on a major network. I don't know.
But there's probably a half a dozen on pinball, but I'm not sure if there's more than one or two on the history of pinball.
That's why we did it. I mean, we said I want to know what the history of pinball is, and I want to see it on TV. Yeah. And then we said we're going to shoot for if we're going to do this, let's go all the way. Let's go all in like we always do when we do projects.
And of course, this one started from the very beginning.
Yeah, so we wanted an American television release, and that was the whole. I mean, at the beginning, that was what we were thinking, right? As we started talking about it. We saw this on a national cable network. So we knew it had to be to appeal to the common man on the street. Anybody would get it. I don't remember. I mean, I remember I talked to Beyond in Australia, and I kind of shut them down because I said, we're almost done with it. We weren't, but I didn't want them to. I was jockeying with them. I said, you know, we're almost done. You guys should do something else. So I don't think there was another one. There, and then there's that Tilt thing that came out. But that didn't make it to TV. I think that was just on DVD release or Netflix. I'm almost hesitant about doing this on Netflix because I'd rather sell the one with the menu and the extra features and stuff like that. Because if it's on Netflix, people just watch on Netflix and then that's it. And they won't get all the extra stuff. They won't get the cool stuff. And it won't be as high a quality either. So,
Are you going to try to stop the sale of the VHS copies?
Not at this point.
No, it's too much work. We stopped one guy. He was bootlegging them pretty good out of New York.
But you know what? Most people don't even have VHS machines anymore.
No, right.
So, I mean...
And we go nuts try to stop these...
When I first found it, I was shocked. What's VHS?
Yeah.
DVDs were out, but are the DVDs available on Amazon?
They will be next... week.
No, they're available now historyofpinballdvd.com. You can order it on your PayPal or send check or money order. And they're available at the show here. You could buy them. Here, where are they? At the front booth? And you can buy these at the Marco, and you can buy them at the front booth, I think.
Yeah.
So you can buy them here, or we have some. So it's a $24.95 retail item when we're doing it for
$19.95. It's in TSC.
It's in TSC.
It'll play on a computer?
Yes, yes. It'll play on your computer. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I played it on my... The first one I got, I put in my... The first one I got, I put in my Hewlett-Packard and played it. It worked. Just played on the...
But if it's in TSC, it's not going to play on a PAL TV.
No, it won't. It
will, TV?
A PAL TV. No,
PAL,
you will, it won't.
Not PAL.
It's not PAL.
Yeah, unless we get a request for a master of that for some kind of a European distribution. I mean, this... We had this running in Israel, other countries, Europe, all over the South Africa. It was on TV around the world. So we had to change the masters. But I don't even know whether if we have those masters still.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was done in other countries as well. We did a limited television distribution deal through a company out of New York. I can't even remember their name. But they did it around the world, too. We have to split the master with the English and stuff on one side so they could put the other language on the other track. So I do have the split track master still.
Oh, you should have a Spanish language version.
Yeah, we should. Half the people where we live are Spanish, you know. So,
You can play
NTSC on the computer. No, there's most power. DVD players will play NTSC.
Okay. So...
Does anyone else have any questions?
Did you have any constraints from the network as far as, I mean, time, anything else that they put on you?
Time, and, you know, we couldn't do anything. It had to be like kind of a family kind of thing. We couldn't, you know. They had to approve it. American Movie Classics had the final say. They were like the executive producers in the end for television. So it was linked with commercial time. It had to come to like 43, 44 minutes, whatever it was.
Yeah, we couldn't show a couple of the back glasses that were hanging in Slash's bathroom.
Yeah, he had some very interesting back glasses. They were just... And Howie goes, look at this. I go, wow, that's wild. And Joe, I think Joe Perry had one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw some interesting back glasses that can't make TV. And then we saw one from Gene that was like...
when?
What?
Win-win?
No, it was no. Big Dick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I just don't think how we can get that on TV. But I heard the story about how that was made from somebody, and it was just that was. Yeah, Herb Silver. That story. I go, wow, that's cool. So, but Herb was great. We talked to him. We interviewed him about Jack of Diamonds. Is that his game?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of a retro modern game.
King of Diamonds.
Okay, so yeah, which was great. I mean, talk about a tight game with a classic look and the modern technology. So that was interesting. So Gene was interesting. We interviewed him. Who else have we interviewed? My brain is. That's a. We haven't interviewed. Oh no, Dan Miller. He did a lot. He did a lot of talking about some games. Michael's been kind of crazy all over the place, and he's like, wow, busier than we are. But Dan's been very nice. He's been very receptive. He's, you know, he meets us. He opens up the game, and we shoot it, and he tells us what's unique about it, which is what we need to make a great documentary about pinball. You really got to know, you know, why this game, what's neat about it, historical significance. You know, and when you talk to the creators, you know, why did you make it? What was first? What was new? What was different? What was unique about the game? So. Oh, okay.
I could see how the pinheads and the pinball enthusiasts would really embrace it like this video. How do you transcend it to the rest of the population? What makes this general audience as opposed to just the pinball community?
You know, I think that's one of the reasons we put the celebrities in. Because, you know, you open that up to someone like Slash. When you go on YouTube, you'll see, you know, 50,000 or 100,000 hits on a Slash
talking
YouTube
in our
video.
Yeah.
So, you know, by putting him in there, now we've never taken anything of Slash and put it on YouTube. But now that we have this done, what we'll do is we'll take some excerpts, we'll put them on there, and then we'll let them know that they can watch more of it if they get this. So that opens it up to the whole
everybody,
general community.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important part of it. You know, everyone loves pinball, but not everyone plays it.
And they don't know the story. Nobody knows the history. Yeah. The girl at, like, Starbucks, she was, like, enthralled. She saw this. She didn't know about this thing over here. And this older woman, and she go, wow, yeah, pinball. What's your favorite game? And she was telling me about Space Invaders, the big giant one. She knew all about it, how the mirrors go back. She said, what was your high score? I said, I turned it over once. I mean, it was like, I think, you know, this needs to maybe be re-released, and probably, you know, parts one and two should go out maybe together. I mean, I think part two will go out next. But I think both of them need to be seen to introduce the world to pinball.
Maybe on this next one.
Maybe on part two.
We can't do it on this one because this is, you know, it wasn't shot in HD. But the new one is shot in HD, and
so
we will be able to do a Blu-ray, yeah.
So that's possible. And we've gotten more connections in the media and Hollywood and television since then. This one show Ron knows about that you watched, that got a lot of interest already from an agent who wants to rep it. So,
but the internet will make a big difference this time around. It'll help get the message out. It'll help let people know that it's available.
Yeah, when we did the internet was just getting going.
That's right.
Have you got the name of a current big celebrity that happens to be big in pinball?
I'm going to push Gary for that, or his people, because I think they're going to be the ones who are going to connect me to Hollywood. Yeah, yeah. I hope I'm counting on it. So
mention the Pacific Pinball Museum to them while you're at it.
We will.
Okay. All right.
Donation there.
Okay. Yes, we will. We will.
Were there any special challenges of trying to build something that have 1,000 people and 400 machines?
You mean here?
Yeah.
It's impossible to do it now because the place is full of people. Right? And you're just going to piss people off and get in their way. There's no way to win. I mean, we've done this in... We've shot in bike route. Me and Howard have shot a lot of things where there's tons of people. And I almost got killed once by a guy in the Hell's Angels because I was shooting. I didn't realize that a lot of them are fugitives and really bad guys. So we're shooting this motorcycle thing. And I'm shooting a bike. But behind them is this big, pissed off Hell's Angel guy. And he goes, hey. And I remember earlier in the day when I heard him say, hey, I seen a smashed up nice camera and tape everywhere. They had taken it. And they're a lot of them are fugitives. They don't want to be seen. Destroyed the camera, destroyed the... I said, they're going to do this with this big, expensive camera. I go, screw that. So I go, let's go. So we jumped over this fence. And me and this guy ran in the woods about a half a mile. We were, like, sprinting and, you know, dodging through trees. It was crazy, you know. So it's tough to shoot in crowds and not piss somebody off. When we were at Tony Page's house today, Perfect. Nobody there. We got Big Bang Bar. We get perfect audio. You take the glass off. You get perfect shots. When you're here, we have to come early in the morning when nobody's here, before they get here, shoot it, get the good sound, find out all the pertinent information about the machine, shoot those things so you have, that's called B-roll. So when the narrator's talking, you show each little thing. What's unique about the, I'm really fascinated with the, what do you call that, the back,
backlash?
Not the backlash, the little cartoony stuff. What is that called?
The matrix?
I loved it on Big Bang. I love the dot matrix stuff. So we were like waiting, like we were shooting Scared Stiff, and Howard's, I could see him going, all right, come on. But no, I want to see Elvira come up and do all these things. So I wanted to get a lot of that stuff because that's neat to me. I like that.
I'll tell you an interesting story that we ran up against when we were shooting in Chicago at an expo. 15 years ago, the lights that we were using were like Mo Richardson's, and they were 2 1,000-watt bulbs in each of these lights. And we'd have two of them and sometimes three of them to try to get the right lighting. That takes a lot of amps. And, we'd have guys plugging these things in, and there's tournaments going on, and all of a sudden all the lights went out in one corner of the room. And I don't even know to this day if we caused it, but I'm sure we were part of it.
We had lights going everywhere.
And it's like everybody just freezes, and people are like crazy.
It wiped out the tournament. I mean, they were all playing Circus Voltaire, like 50 people went black. I think one of our guys plugged in the thing. I think we did it. I wanted to dive under a chair,
But, today everything's, the real low-voltage lights. They're either fluorescent or they're LEDs, and you can really get away with that stuff. So, but it's hard. When you're in a crowd, it's really difficult to shoot because there's lots of problems. And don't forget, there's also lots of technical problems because there's lots of reflections and
noise, background noise that you can't use. You want to hear the machine, not the people in the background so much.
If you want someone to be interviewed in the room, you have to very closely mic them and try to get them so much louder than the background noise, and it's difficult.
So like right now it would be tough to shoot out there,
You took a lot of video on pinball luminaries. Do you have a chance to talk to the little kid sitting on a chair trying to play pinball? Or the mom and dad that brought their...
No, we haven't.
It's an interesting perspective, but we haven't done that yet.
There's some hilarious shots. A little kid's got his nose on the glass and he's doing...
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. We actually did shoot some kids playing over the weekend, but we didn't interview anyone.
Yeah. Well, we got some footage of a little girl standing up on the stool playing a game. We got that. We got a couple kids. That was neat.
Some of the types that come here, they're like 3 years old.
Yeah, little kids are just...
One guy came in and had a four-year-old. He said, "This kid teaches me how to play."
Yeah. I was surprised that little kids, tiny little kids really liked it, That is a good point. We should shoot some of that stuff, Anybody, any other questions?
So where is the video available to buy?
It's available at Marco is selling it, the guy down in the far corner, Marco.
And the museum is selling it in the front.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so those are the two places you can get it. And then you can get it on our website, which is newvideoimages.com or historyofpinballdvd.com. But I think that was the most disappointing thing for me and Howard was, just seeing these bad VHS copies showing up on the internet, and you see it on YouTube. Even the YouTube stuff was crap because it's a copy of a copy of a copy. I mean, how many times are you going to do this thing, And so we wanted to say, let's get it right off that master tape, which we haven't played in 15 years, run it once and grab it. And that's what we did. That's why this looks good. And obviously the second one's going to look really good too with the technology that we have today.
And it's 4x3 format too, right? The original.
Correct.
Yeah, you're shooting 16.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot different.
Yeah. I can just... I know. And we're excited. Just we look at the footage after we shot it, we go, this looks, this is like, couldn't look any better than this, So that goes back to what Ron was talking about. What's the best thing? It's just you shooting the pinball machine with perfect audio, nobody around, everybody quiet, not tons of reflections in the back glass. That's the perfect shot, And then you get in the machine the best you can with that camera, and you follow the ball, and you try to get that person in that machine. That's the best way to shoot a game. And that's what we try to do every time we shoot a pinball game. Again, it was just it was the what was fun with me and Howard was it was a different background. I Gottlieb Sure Shot. That was my favorite game when I was 13, and I had a paper route. And Howard came from the penny arcades, where the games were really a penny and a Coney Island type of atmosphere. So that was kind of, he's from Revere Beach, and I'm from Richmond, Virginia. So we had completely different. When I'd talk about pinball, and when he would talk about, they were completely non, he was talking about these payoff machines. I didn't know what he was talking about. He's trying to explain it. Yeah, they're like these bingo games. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I really didn't. I just, thought about Gottlieb and Sure Shot and Top Card and the games I grew up when I was a teenager.
Did you guys meet Gordon Hussey?
I talked to him on the phone.
Yeah.
He was good friends with Dick Michelle.
Yes, yeah.
Here at the show, very famous winner.
Yeah, they interviewed us and him for Cigar Aficionado magazine. When the History of Pinball came out, we got a lot of press. We were on the Howard Stern Show. We were on Westwood One Radio Network. We were on this TV show about collecting stuff. That was a national show. Yeah. Yeah, we had a good publicist. I can't remember her name. Anybody else, like, while I'm in Chicago, any ideas of anybody else we should shoot?
Well, it's almost too late, but Alvin Gottlieb.
Okay, I've talked to Michael Gottlieb. I mean, he's in this one.
Yeah, Alvin's rather poor health.
Okay.
Judd Weinberg, who ran the company.
Who's that?
Judd Weinberg. He was the son-in-law of David Gottlieb.
Okay.
But he's in rather poor health, too. Oh. You might even get 30 good seconds. They're two of the most famous guys from that era.
Okay, okay. So those are the two people in Chicago to get, that come to mind. Okay. All right, so I guess we're going to show the movie now, and... hope you enjoyed, and if you'd like to get a copy, just you can see us or get one inside there.